What's up, Power Players? It's your host and founder of Empower Nani. I'm coming to you live with another episode of Power Talk. So welcome to Season 1, Episode 43. Let's go! Nani, who did you bring into the Power Talk today? Well, I had the honor of bringing in my good friend, Charlie Jabbily, also known as Charlie Rocket, CEO Charlie. He's a former music mogul. He's a Nike athlete. He's completed an Ironman. And now he's the creator of Quantopia. He's also an international known speaker. And I'm super excited to dive into this conversation with him today, because this value that he brought, it's like no other. So I got one thing to ask of you, maybe two. The first thing is this: turn off all your noise, turn off all the distractions, and make sure you are tunneled vision in on this. Make sure you have a pen and paper handy, notepad and pencil, whatever it may be. Just make sure you have something to write these notes on. Secondly, I have one very, 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 very important question to ask you today, and that's this. You ready? I'm ready. Let's go.
What's up? What's up?
What's up, Charlie? How you doing?
I'm on a winning streak. What's up with you?
I'm excited. I'm on a winning streak because I got you on the Power Talk today, man.
I'm excited.
So just to give you a little intro of who I am and who some of these people are that you see on here, my name's Nani. I'm the fearless leader of the Empower Tribe. Empower is a mastermind group where we help individuals execute to the next level. And today I brought my tribe with me to just support me, ask some questions, and take advantage of a power player like you being involved. So I'm excited.
Sweet.
You look great, man. You're glowing. I love it.
Hey, I'm feeling good. That's what happens when you feel good, you know?
There we go. There we go. So you guys, for those of you that don't know, this is Charlie Jabbily. He's also known as CEO Charlie or Charlie Rocket. I brought him on here today because I think his story is literally admirable. He went from $1 million music mogul to Nike athlete. And it's been a lot of trials and tribulations that he has occurred to get to where he's at today. So, Charlie, if you can, let these people know a little bit about you, who you are, what you represent, and what you're doing right now.
First thing I would describe about me is I'm a dreamer. Like, and not just like the dreamer in the sense of like I have dreams, but like I love creating. I believe like we're all creators. I believe we all have these dreams inside of us, and they're given to us for a reason, because that's a glimpse into the future of, it's a potential possibility that like God or the universe has given us. And that's why we're able to see that vision. And I believe we're able to create. I study like quantum physics and the law of attraction. And I write in my magic notebook every single morning, and I try to create these dreams. And when I write, I say, it's already done. Time hasn't caught up yet.
I love that.
I would say that's what I am first and foremost. And that's why I've been able to do what I've done in my life, whether it was in the music industry as a teenager to, you know, winning Grammys to, you know, now winning Emmys and being able to just do everything I'll say set my mind to, but I really say like set my heart to. Because my heart is like, it's just as smart as my mind. Like, for example, like if I were to ask you a question real quick, I would complete this sentence. Follow your
heart.
Follow your
heart.
Say something else. Follow your
mind. Follow your leader. Follow your heart. Follow your intuition. Follow your purpose.
Now you said something interesting there. You said mind. Now say that again. Follow your
mind.
Feels a little weird, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
We always are told, like as kids, like to follow our heart. And it's just something like intuitively in us, like follow our dreams, follow our heart, follow your gut. Like, you know, but like we're talking about like this section of our body right here, yeah, that obviously has something we need to follow. Now, if I were to ask you to point at yourself, Point at yourself.
I'm pointing right here. Basically, I'm going to be pointing at my chest.
Yeah. Now, wouldn't it be weird if you did this?
Yeah.
Like point at yourself.
Now I'm pointing at my mind. Now I'm pointing at my mind, but when I refer to myself, I'm like pointing right here.
Exactly. So we identify like our hearts with ourselves, but for some reason we spend so much time in our minds, and our minds are like the master trickster. Yeah. Like it can have all this great knowledge, and then it can make up all this like false information that's not even real, that we start thinking is real, and it'll talk us out of our dreams. Like sometimes we'll like think of our dream, and like our heart starts singing and our eyes look up and we get excited, and then our brain steps in and starts saying, yeah, that's not very realistic. You know, like, let's be a little bit more realistic. So our brains can play tricks on us, where our hearts, it just knows what's really, really, really possible.
Definitely. And I agree with that. You know, I'm a firm believer that we cause our own self-sabotage. And a lot of the time that our subconscious mind acts as the demander and our conscious mind is the commander. So what you say, it's going to filter out to be right. So I'm really excited to have you on here, because a lot of the times I have these business entrepreneurs, and I love your perspective on things, because you're not living a profit-driven life. What you're living is a purpose-driven life. And what I've realized from a lot of these entrepreneurs that I bring on here and these influencers is that they're looking for exactly what you found at the end of their journey, or when it gets too far. And what I love about you is that you stopped your journey. Like, you literally stopped it and said, no. I don't want to live this way no more. There has to be something greater than me, right? And that's what I kind of want to get into, because it's admirable, man. Like, you're 16 years old. You started up a website, spityourgame.com, for independent artists, right? You get seen by Interscope Records. Interscope Records like, yo, this is crazy. I love it. And the reason I love it is because you told your mom from the beginning, I'm going to be great. This hip-hop thing is going to be crazy. I'm telling you, just wait on it. Just wait on it. 16 years old, you get that call. Then you fall in love with the concept of hip-hop. You fall in love now with videotaping, music videos, and now you're a camera guy for Soulja Boy. Now, with that, how was your mindset then? Were you still as big as the law of attraction? Or were you just a dreamer that was like, man, I'm going to say it, and it just keeps happening?
This was actually one of the very first experiences I ever had with the law of attraction. So a year before, so I was in high school, and I remember we were about to graduate, and I told one of my friends, I was like, yeah, I was like, I'm going to be on tour. I said, we're going to Las Vegas. We're going to go to all these places. And this is me just making it up in my mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, a year later, Soulja Boy's record label calls me. And I remember I was in all those cities that I had just told my friend, like, almost fictitiously. Like, I was just, like, speaking it into existence.
Yeah.
Oh, and that reminds me, the root origin of the word abracadabra in Hebrew means, as I speak, I create.
Really?
Yes.
I love that.
In America, we use it as like magic, like abracadabra, something comes true, but that is exactly what it is. Yeah. Our words, our mouths, our spirit, like when we say it, and that's why I make sure I tell my dreams to everybody. So I experienced the law of attraction accidentally in my younger years by saying, yeah, I'm going to be in Las Vegas, I'm going to be on tour, and boom, it came true. But my mindset back then was a little caught up in the life of hip hop. And there's nothing wrong with it, because it was mistakes I made that I got to learn from. But I was thinking I was, you know, big stuff.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like, I should have had a more like student, like humble, like, I'm here to learn, I'm here to serve. And that serving concept as an entrepreneur is what saved my life, because when Soulja Boy fired me, I signed a girl group.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, well, one, like, Soulja Boy fires me, I have to go back to my mom's basement. And, you know, like, Ma, like, I got fired and I need to move back in. And I found this girl group and I signed them, and believe it or not, Interscope Records really liked them, and Interscope Records signed them.
Yeah.
And they ended up firing me as well. They left me for Sierra's manager, and they were like, well, we can't have an 18-year-old manager.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're a big group now. And I'm like, I'm the reason why you're a big group. What are you talking about? But the reality was, is I was still not of servitude. I was doing a good job as a manager, but they weren't happy. So I left room to get fired. And I remember going back to my mom's basement. I asked my mom, and who sold vacuum cleaners, by the way. So my mom sold vacuum cleaners, my dad sold vacuum cleaners, and my grandfather sold vacuum cleaners. And when you have a vacuum cleaner salesman, they have a manager, and that manager is the manager of the branch. And there was this one manager that my mom loved working for. Now, vacuum cleaner management and music management, two opposite worlds, but I was desperate.
Yeah.
I went to this guy by the name of Bill Cook. And I said, Bill, how did you get my mom to love you so much as a manager when she hated all her other managers?
Yeah.
And he said one thing. He said, Charlie, you need to be of servitude. I'm like, of servitude? My artists are signed to me. I'm the big boss. I don't work for them. Like, you know? And he said, that's where you're missing it. He said, your artists will always leave you if you're not of service. And he completely reprogrammed me as an entrepreneur. And I became a humble servant. I stopped trying to be flashy, stopped trying to be this like big successful music industry executive. And I just became known as the guy who is going to get it done. That means if I got to hold the camera, pass out the CDs myself, drive to the radio stations, and I just ran that play. And I was able to get from my mom's basement all the way up to having 3 top 10 records in the country without a record deal and negotiate one of the biggest bidding wars in Atlanta hip hop history.
Yeah.
Where like P. Diddy is calling my phone 10 times in a row, like begging.
Let's get to that, because that right there, I believe in, there's no coincidences. And I believe that, you know, I'm a woman of faith, and I believe that there's a big purpose greater than us, right? And I believe that everything happens for a reason. So right there, you had to have a taste of your humble pie, right? Your group had to leave you. You know, Soulja Boy's manager had to go ahead and fire you. And you got dirt thrown in your face 2 times, right? And then you discover Travis Porter. Where that's, you know, the 3, you know, amazing records that are hit records, they're not signed. And now you get into this zone where P. Diddy's contacting you. These big record labels are contacting you. Would you say that you're very grateful, or very much so grateful, that this dirt thrown at you happened prior to that? Because you just said that you had to be humble. So imagine if you didn't come into that scenario with this humble mindset and this egotistic way. Imagine getting dirt thrown at you with the Travis Porter thing. So I really believe that, you know, these things that happen to us are failures that we experience. It's not because they want to see us fail. It's that you're getting prepared for something bigger. The process is bigger. And most people hate the P word, right? Process, because there's a lot of shit that happens in the process, you know, but your process evolved to boom, Travis Porter. So tell me a little bit about that, because to deny Diddy, to deny these big labels, and to really just sit back and say, man, I got to think about this. How was that for you as an entrepreneur? You know, that's a big weight on your shoulder.
Well, I tell you, all the, I'm going to sound like a preacher for a second, but I always say the blessings come from the lessons.
It does. It does.
And it was like the darkness is where I was actually able to find the light. Like if it's like super bright outside, you can't see a light, you know, it's like you can't see it, but in the darkness is when you can actually pinpoint where the light is. And I learned the mentality. Like when I got on the phone, I was like, I'm on a winning streak.
Yeah.
You know, like I realized when I got fired from being a cameraman, I was really on a winning streak, because God didn't want me to be a cameraman anymore. He wanted me to be a big time manager. So that was my opportunity to become a manager. And when the girl group fired me, I was like, I'm on a winning streak because I think I can have a better group than them. And I found a better group than them. And so everything that's bad that's happened in my life, I flip it. I turn it into a winning streak, and then I feel like a winner. So my frequency feels like a winner, and then I attract wins, and then I'm training my brain to only look at the wins because my brain can only look at one thing at a time consciously. So yeah. It's like, okay, I'm just going to focus on the wins, and I keep finding them. Even when bad things are happening, well, I could choose what I'm going to look at. So boom, I'm looking at the wins, and it also taught me to respect and not just look up for answers.
Yeah.
So a lot of times we look to successful business people, or we look to like mentors who have been successful to get our answers. But I was so humbled that I began to look all around me for the people that are going to change my life. Yeah. Even the people below me can change my life. And I remember there was this one day when we were struggling because we had a really bad situation happen with our number one biggest song, and it was taken away from us. And another artist who we were partnered with, you know, there was a big controversy around the song. So our biggest song was taken away from us. And all the shows slowed down. The record labels lost interest. Everybody was tapping out. And I went to this studio one day, and there was this kid who was mixing songs for us. And he charged $50 to mix a song, which is like dirt cheap. And he was really good. And I pulled up at the studio. I think I owed him like $100. And he walks outside, and I just saw this like dark cloud over him. And I said to him, I said, are you okay, bro? He said, nah, man, I'm struggling right now. I was like, what's going on? He said, well, man, to be honest with you, I've been homeless for the past couple months. I've been sleeping on this couch in this studio, like a recording studio. And I said, you know what, bro? Here's a few hundred extra dollars. And I want to give you a job.
Yeah.
And I went and picked him up every single day, and I drove him to our little studio. We had like a little like chocolate factory. Like it was like a miniature little house.
Yeah.
A chocolate factory. And we turned it into a recording studio because it was the only thing we could afford at the time. It was like $500 a month. And I remember we had our little speakers. Like, and we would like take the mini trash cans and flip them upside down, and those would be our speaker stands.
Yeah.
And we had like the old quilts hanging from the vent hood, like where they would make the chocolate. And that was our booth. And one day this kid, he brought a keyboard to the studio. And we were like kind of like making fun of him a little bit. Like, what you got a keyboard for? You're an engineer. You just record music. You don't make music. He's like, nah, you know, like, I make a little bit of music. He said, make something. Very first beat he made was a top 10 record in the country for us. It was called Make It Rain by Travis Porter.
That's crazy. I know that song. That's nuts.
The second beat he made was also a top 10 record in the country for us. It was called Bring It Back by Travis Porter. Then the third beat he made for us became the number two song in the country. And it was called Okay Now Ladies. Yeah. It was called A Lady.
Oh, I know that song too. That's so amazing to know the story behind it now. That's powerful, man. That's really powerful.
So it gets even better. Like, remember what I said about we can't always look up to the people to change our lives? Sometimes it's the people below us or the people around us.
Yeah.
This kid, he went on to discover Post Malone, and he signed Post Malone, and now he's one of the biggest producers and executives in the entire music industry.
That's amazing. That is amazing. And that's from looking all around. Like, if you guys are listening to this and the people that are on this conversation, he just said something very powerful, that not only looking to mentors and influencers, but you got to look all around you, because you don't know the opportunities that are right there. Blessings are always in disguise, but we're always the one that are in disguise of the blessings. That was crazy. Mm. I love that. Now, my question to you is, I have a question from one of the members in the group. Bethany asked, with so much success, so young, what are some young practical tips for staying vulnerable and grounded while you're seeking your success?
Oh my goodness. Oh, I can't imagine 20-year-old Charlie even like knowing how to listen to advice on how to be vulnerable. It's going to take a very, very special, like, young person to understand practical advice on being vulnerable and grounded. I actually believe it would be really good for people to make mistakes and for them to walk through the process. And if they're going to learn from somebody like me, learn through my actions. So I don't really have like a 7-step guide, you know, for somebody to be vulnerable or grounded. But how I go about it, the code I live by, which operates my entire operating system, is always do what's right. And I don't call vulnerability vulnerability. I call vulnerability honesty. Because when I look up the definition of vulnerability, the definition says likely to be preyed on. Now, when I'm being vulnerable, I call it being honest. When I'm being honest about things that are wrong with me, I'm not likely to be preyed on. I'm stronger, actually. And it's, to me, it's the opposite of likely to be preyed on. And I think back to like Eminem, for example, in 8 Mile. Now, why did he win the rap battle? Because he was honest about, I lived in a trailer park, I got beat up, da da da. It made him invincible by just telling the truth. It's when we hide the truth and we try to become things we're not, that's when we're likely to be preyed on, not when we're being honest. So people always say, Charlie, like, you're so vulnerable on your social media. And I said, I'm not. I'm being honest on my social media, and that makes me stronger. So I understand why people say vulnerability. I'm a little like anal about the definition, but yeah, like, do what's right, be honest, and be built to last. Like, the mistakes I made when I was young, just getting too caught up and trying to make things about me, it got me in trouble. Trouble that was great trouble, because I learned. But I have this method of staying grounded, and it's a infinity loop. And I'll tell you what this means. And it's 4 steps. Now, I believe in each one of us, there's masculinity and femininity, right?
Yeah.
Masculine is breathing out. Feminine is breathing in. Okay, so we're gonna give and receive 4 times. And this is the process I go throughout my day. The first, I will receive protection. I will know I'm protected. I will know the angels are protecting me. If I'm protected, then I can give love. Okay? Now, if you do not feel protected and you are in fear, you cannot give love. You're too busy. You're too busy trying to protect yourself. You can't give to anybody else. So the only way to give love is to know you're protected. Okay? Now, this is an infinity loop. So watch. So we started in the middle. We're going around this way. So we receive protection, then we're giving love. As it's coming back to this side, we're going to receive blessings, because when we give love, we then receive blessing. And when we receive blessings, it is our duty to give blessings. Okay? And when we give blessings, we receive more protection. because we gave blessings. And when we receive more protection, we then can give more love. When we give more love, we receive more blessings. When we receive more blessings, we must give more blessings. When we give more blessings, we receive even more protection. And when we receive more protection, we're able to give more love. And it's an infinity loop that never stops, but it keeps speeding up because we receive the protection, then we give the love. Then we receive the blessings, then we give the blessings. So it is just goes on forever. And that's how I create my success. And that's how I remain grounded. I always remember I'm protected.
I love that. I really do. That's really like the law of reciprocity, right? You give without an intent of receiving, but when you give with good intent, it comes back to you double. And I really, really love that because most of us don't understand those laws, those simple laws of repurpose, the simple law of reciprocity. And with you, your life is that. You give and you always got. And I really love the fact that your story isn't based upon something fictitious. It's something real. Like you said, most people don't understand the concept of vulnerability. It is just being honest with where you're at. Your self-discovery story, the only reason why it's so hard to face is the truth hurts. And the truth does hurt when you know that you've been self-sabotaging or you've been the one that's in your own way. So I love that you stated that. And this is something that I want to touch on. In 2011, you were getting bigger, but you were also getting bigger, bigger in your health, right? You were at 304 pounds. As you got bigger, the more you got unhealthier, right? Now, in 2012, you lost 100 pounds by starving yourself. So obviously, you weren't in a good state of mind, right? You knew something had to change, but you were looking for a shortcut with it. What was that breaking moment where you're like, I got to stop shortcutting. I got to stop lying to myself. Because within this time, yeah, you had your manifestation game going, but you didn't have that mindset as strong as it is right now. So what made you want to stop having shortcuts?
Whew. I realized in life there was no shortcut because when I took the shortcut, it was like the same amount of time.
Yeah.
I just did it the right way because I'm like, when I starved myself down 100 pounds, it formed a food addiction. Because if you want to be addicted to something, just say you can't have it. Yeah. Immediately, your body goes into scarcity mode and it starts like craving things that you said it can't have. It's like a kid don't want to play with a toy until you take it away from them. Then it's like, I want my toy. Like it was there the whole time. So I starved myself down. I started gaining weight back because I began binge eating. And my binge eating was like, it was extreme because I knew I could lose weight by starving myself. So if I would mess up on my diet, I would mess up a lot because I would always say, well, like, I'll just go back to starving myself. And when I would trip down one step, I'll just push myself down all the rest. And there would be nights where I had 15,000 calories and I would wake up the next morning and my skin would be bruised because I would expand so much overnight and my heart would just be like pounding for days. So I just got tired. I got tired of really the war. I got tired of the battle. And I asked myself a series of questions. The first question was, you know, and I'm going to jump ahead a little bit because I got diagnosed with a brain tumor through all this, which really sent me to rock bottom. And when you're diagnosed with a brain tumor and you're looking at your life as, you know, it's coming to an end, it feels like, you start looking at your life like it's a movie. And there's one thing we all have in common. We want a happy ending to our movie. It's like, that's what we all want. And here I am looking at my life. Here's this kid who made a lot of money in the music industry and died. It's like, my story isn't over yet. Kept telling myself that my story isn't over yet. And I said, well, what's the root problem of all of this? And that's the good thing about rock bottom is it'll take you to the actual roots. It'll take you deep below ground.
Yep.
To the area that's showing you why the fruit isn't growing on the tree. Only the roots have the answer to that question.
Yeah.
And I asked myself a simple question. If you are what you eat, and I'm dying, is what I'm eating dead or alive? And I looked at everything I was eating in my life, and I was eating all food that is low frequency, like very dead. It can sit on a shelf for 4 years, or, you know, like it's an animal that's dead. And I was like, okay, well, if I'm eating low frequency and my body is sick, how do I eat high frequency and maybe I could become alive if I eat food that's alive?
Yeah.
And that's when I decided to go plant-based, and I just started eating high-frequency food. And, you know, when we get on this call, you say, you're glowing. It's because the food I eat is glowing.
Yeah.
You know, like if we were to take an instrument that would, like, measure the energy coming off of, let's say, a Clif Bar, you know, which is healthy, which is vegan, and all that stuff, but it can sit on the shelf for 4 years. The energy that comes off of it is very low.
Yeah.
Versus, let's look at a banana or an orange or something. And it's just like lighting up the screen with all these colors and energy. And that's what I shifted my life to, and my body began to heal itself, and my brain tumor started to shrink, and everything begin, like my asthma went away. Just like I was able to become an endurance athlete. I did an Ironman. Like I remember after the Ironman, it was 16 hours and 41 minutes of exercise, and I wasn't even sore because there was no inflammation in my body.
Yeah.
It was like, whoa, like this is possible. And I credit it to how I eat. It's a complete alkaline diet. There's no inflammation.
And I love that because everything you're stating goes back to being intentional, goes back to showing up, goes back to you really getting in your mind and providing yourself the facts within yourself to keep going. So in 2007, you got the brain tumor. 2015, you ran a marathon. Not once, you ran three marathons. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go into this. What was the hardest part about Ironman? Like, what was that breaking point for you? Did you have a breaking point? What were you contemplating in your mind? My partner just recently ran an ultra marathon, 62 miles. And and he had no training. He just went for it. And he told me that, you know, the hardest part wasn't your legs being done. It was making sure you told your mind that your legs aren't done. He said, it's all a mind thing. So you completed an Ironman, and having that momentum, how was that for you? Like, what was like a very pivotal point in the Ironman where you're like, come on, Charlie, keep going?
So I'm going to give a very disappointing answer.
Oh, man.
to everybody listening, and forgive me, but I did the Ironman and I was very slow. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was like one of the last to finish. And just because I was slow doesn't mean it was hard though.
Yeah.
I went into my Ironman with one thought process. And this was actually got me to show up every day and do it. And it's what got me through the race. I told myself doing an Ironman is going to be easy. Now, in life, we get what we're looking for.
Yep.
If I go into it saying this is going to be hard, I'm going to find a way to validate my thesis.
Yep.
Okay. Because that's what we want to do as humans. We want to validate our mindset to just confirm that we're smart.
Yeah.
So if I'm saying, ooh, it's going to be hard, I'm going to find ways for it to be hard. But I trained for 10 months and I practiced every day this thought process of this is going to be so easy. And when I did the Ironman, there were little parts that were like, we were dealing with headwinds. We were dealing with all this stuff, but it was like, it was easy. it was not hard, I promise. And you know, like, because I showed up every day, and obviously it was easy because I made it through it. If I didn't make it through it, it would have been hard. But I look at things kind of like third grade math, okay? Yeah. So third grade, I remember they were attempting to teach me multiplication. Now, multiplication at one time was very hard.
Yeah.
And then I do it, and then it's easy. Well, so what does hard mean? Hard just means I don't know how to do it. Hard doesn't mean it's hard. Hard means I don't know how to. Like, one time, like, learning to tie my shoe when I was 3 years old was hard.
Yeah.
Only because I didn't know how to. But once I knew how to, was it hard? Nope.
No.
So it's like, if I go into the Ironman and I say it's going to be easy, and I know how to do it because I'm going to train this many days, this many months, and, you know, when I'm facing a bad day and I'm tired, I'm going to go home and sleep. You know what? Like, I don't have to go into this self-sabotaging mode.
Yeah.
To start thinking I'm not good enough. No, I always said it's going to be easy. And the day of the Ironman, it was easy because I was looking for the way for it to be easy. So hope that answers your question.
Man, that was a good answer. That was not disappointing. That was really good, because me and some of my team, we actually jumped off a plane this week. Ooh. And I was explaining to, have you skydived before?
Nope.
Man, do it. I promise you will love it. Listen, so
not gonna do it.
I'm petrified of heights. And I had a moment like how you said, like, telling yourself it was easy. During the plane ride up, it's 15 minutes. And I would say those were the most daunting 15 minutes for me, because I'm the first person to jump, because I guess I was the smallest one. So that freaked me out already. And I'm sitting on the bed of the helicopter or the plane. And the guy opens the door. And when the guy opens the door, I'm thinking to myself, you move off of two things. You move off of fear and you move off of love. So I'm going to tell myself right now, I love this. I love this. This is amazing. I love this moment. I love heights. And in my video of me jumping, you see that moment where I literally am telling myself, okay, I love this. Okay, I love this. Okay, let's go. And that moment that I really was like, I love this. I shifted my fear to love, that when I fell, that was my favorite part. When I fell, because that fall was falling with love. Like, man, I love that I can embrace risk. I love that I could lead a ship. I love this moment right here. And then from there, I'm like, damn, I want to do this again. So I really get that shift, that it really is a mindset thing, that you could really convince your mind, either I'm going to be scared of this and not enjoy this, or I'm going to move based off loving this moment and going forward with it. And that's really kind of the concept where you said, man, this is easy, man, this is easy. Same thing, you know, I got this, I can do this. And I think a big blessing is that we don't get to wake up in the morning and say, man, I have to do this. It's a blessing that we can say, man, I get to do this. I get to have this talk with Charlie. I get to live my life intentionally. And that's your life all the way. You get to enjoy these moments. And now I want to dive into you becoming a Nike athlete. Like, dude, from music artist to wanting to be a music cameraman, to wanting to be the producer, to wanting to be the manager, to now, like, you're like, screw this. I'm going to hit rock bottom, because mind you guys, he had these marathons, but he still hit his rock bottom. And 2017, when he hit rock bottom, he wrote to himself a contract. He wrote to himself a contract basically stating that he's going to be the top 1% athlete in the world, and that he's going to start becoming more intentional. He started becoming plant-based. He lost 125 pounds. And then he went forward to making a Nike promo video. It literally says in the beginning of the video, "Dear Nike, hopefully we will see each other soon." Basically implementing, like, hey, this is going to be a badass video. I know you're going to call me. It's okay. Things take time. Eventually, he drops this video. Within 3 days, he gets over 1 million views. Nike calls him and says, I don't know who you are, but you got my campus going crazy. I need to fly you up here. He gets the news after he flies up there that he's going to be in Dream Crazy commercial with Colin Kaepernick. And the best part about this is the Dream Crazy is his damn line. Can you please explain that moment, man? That's just admirable.
Well, remember at the beginning of this interview when I was like, I'm a dreamer and a creator.
Yeah.
So I wanted to like embody what law of attraction is because I wanted to attract Nike into my life. And the best way to attract something is to be it and to feel what it's like to already be a Nike athlete and to act like it's already done, even though it's not. That's how you align the frequencies. And when you align the frequency, let's say, for example, on a radio. A radio, you align the frequency to a certain, boom, and all of a sudden it can hear the songs that are operating at that frequency.
Yeah.
All you had to do was align. So I wanted to align my heart to the frequency of this is a dream of mine and I want to listen to it. I want to see it. I want to hear it. I want to feel it. So what do Nike athletes have? Nike athletes have Nike commercials and they're wearing Nike clothes.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let me dress up and let me be a Nike athlete. And I'm going to make a fan-made Nike commercial. And the concept I had was Nike needs a common man athlete. They have enough like perfect athletes that are great, but they need a common man athlete that can speak to the, you know, people of the world who have dreams.
Yeah.
So I made the commercial that I wish exists as a Nike commercial. And I put it out and it touched people's hearts. And it touched people's hearts so much because it was made with love and it was made with like this just like genuine, you know, it wasn't to get rich. It wasn't to get, you know, famous. It was to inspire people. And that's what Nike really is about.
Yeah.
And I made a commercial as like their creative director. It's like, okay, let me help Nike. You know, and because yeah. I know if I help Nike, then Nike will help inspire millions of people or hundreds of millions of people. And so Nike called me and they were completely blown away and they flew me up to their campus and they told me, they said, you have reminded us why we come into work every day.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa. They were like, your film was so powerful that it's inspired us to take our company in this direction with our marketing. So we didn't just get the attention of Nike, we've completely shifted Nike, and that's where Nike came up with the Dream Crazy campaign, which was named after my fan-made Nike commercial, Dream Crazy, and I was able to be in it, and I would write down in my magic quantum notebook every day, I'm gonna be in a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams. And when Nike sent me the link, they said, Charlie, we need you to approve of this. They sent me the link, and it was crazy because I didn't know what they had in store. And yeah. It was like, whoa, like Colin Kaepernick is talking about dreams like how I talk about dreams. And yeah. Here is, you know, LeBron James and Serena Williams alongside me. And it just all came true. And it just gave me proof to myself and confirmed to myself, like, wow, we really do have magical superpowers.
Yep.
Because sometimes I even forget.
I got chills because it's so real. It's so real. My God, this year, like, having you on here manifested that. So I said, like, 3 months ago that I was going to have you on here. I didn't get an okay from you yet. Literally, didn't get an okay from you yet. 2 months go by, you finally open up a message of mine, and I'm like, okay, he opened it. He didn't respond though. And then you open up another one and you're like, sure. And I'm like, okay, here we go. Then you go ahead, you give me a date. Then you tell me, you know, you really can't do it. And then out of nowhere, you go ahead and you accept the request. And I'm like, here we go. And this has happened so much with like a lot of things this year. You know, I closed down my moving company that I wasn't feeling happy with anymore to start something just to impact people, because I had this same theory as you, is that I'm being a disservice if I don't take my story and tell others about it. My favorite line to say is taking your mess and turning it into a mission. You know, I used to be a drug dealer, drug user, used to have really bad habits. I turned into an entrepreneur. I got screwed over by all my partners, built my business back up from the ground up. And I wasn't happy because I'm like, I'm bigger than this. There's a purpose greater than me. And since I've been starting, you know, Empower, moving to impact people, so much of what I've turned into a vision is turning into a reality. And this is just amazing to hear your story. It's like an admirable thing, man. You're inspiring me. I got chills. I'm excited. And this is why I'm excited to ask you this question. The I am you theory. Please explain that. I love where you said it worked for Spider-Man, it worked for Jesus, it worked for Apple, and it also worked for Michael Jordan, and why we should have that same concept of it.
Yeah. So this is a theory of mine that I believe is understood by the most successful people in the world, but completely ignored by most everybody.
Yeah.
So we live in a world of social media, a social media that is all built around status. That's basically the paradigm we live in. It's a status-driven world. And influencers operate in one way, while influential people operate in another. So the influencer tone is, I'm so perfect, you should follow me. I'm so rich, you should follow me. I'm so smart, look at all my New York Times bestsellers, like, you should follow me. It, when we go to, you know, somebody's page, the very first thing we're looking at, like, let's say on Instagram, the very first thing our eyes usually go to is how many followers they have, and then let's read their bio.
Yeah.
Like, to see their accolades. So the most successful people in the world, or the most successful corporations or movements in the world, operate in the exact opposite paradigm. While influencers are saying, I'm so perfect, follow me. Let's take, for example, it actually started with Spider-Man. So I did a Google search, and this is what inspired all of this. I did a Google search and I said, what is the most profitable superhero franchise? Because people love superheroes.
Yeah.
Which one makes the most money? Because I want to know why. And I saw that Spider-Man was number one. And I was like, huh, I wonder why. Let me break this down. Spider-Man is the only superhero that didn't have the big muscles. His aunt could not pay the rent. He couldn't really, like, get the girl. It was, like, so human.
He resonates with so many people.
He was just a boy, you know, and he wasn't perfect. He was struggling. And then, so that I was like, okay, well, does this apply to other influential things? So I Googled, what is the number one religion in the world? And as far as, like, followers, not opinion. And it was Christianity. And I said, okay, let's see if these same rules apply for Christianity. And so I'm taking a look at Jesus, not as a believer, but kind of like as a business, like marketing guru. Like, okay, let's study how Jesus became so influential. And he was a carpenter who hung out with the poor people.
Yeah.
And yeah, he had a six pack, but just imagine if, like, Jesus was like, follow me because of my six pack, you know, like it would be really weird to see Jesus operate like how an influencer operates. Imagine Jesus coming up on a white horse, like Game of Thrones style, like with the sword.
Yeah.
And it's like, I am the great savior, follow me.
Yeah.
That would be really weird. And that's what most all of us are doing. We're saying, I'm the great savior, follow me. Well, if Jesus did that, yeah, he would have had more than 12 followers at the time. But when he died, it would have been over.
Yeah.
But instead, he did 3 years worth of work. And now 2,000 years later, he is, like, still here.
Yeah.
Like, so billions of people are affected because of how he operated back 2,000 years ago. So I see this with Oprah. She had her abuse story when she was young. You know, she had her getting fired story. you know, when she was 30 years old as a TV reporter. Then she has her weight loss struggles. She is so us. Why do you think she's one of the most influential people in the world? Because it's like when we're thinking of Oprah, we're not thinking of this perfect human being who's trying to make us feel small to make her feel big. Like, no, when we look at Oprah, it's like, that's Auntie Oprah. She's just like us. She has problems just like us, and we can see the problems and we know the story. And so that's the I am you theory, that in order to have influence, let's not say how much different we are. Let's become what we truly are. And what we truly are is people who has problems just like everybody else. And that's how you become influential and not just an influencer.
I love that. And can you break down the difference between influential and influencer? I know you have whiteboards by Charlie, but then you took down everything because you have a community that's called Quantopia. And we'll get into that in a little bit, because I'm sure everybody's going to want to know where to get your stuff. I was trying to look up all your stuff because I wanted to get deeper into this. And I'm like, damn it, it's too late for me now. I need to go on Quantopia. So can you explain that theory, the influencers versus influential people? Because I think that's very powerful to be very clear on, because we live in a world now that most people are either looking for an influencer to change their life rather than seeing that they are the reason they need to change their life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So influencers operate like this. Okay. This is a pyramid. And the influencer is at the top with everybody on the bottom looking up at them. Okay, now influential people, they operate by the exact opposite paradigm shift. The influential people of the world are at the bottom. They're at the bottom of the mountain lifting everybody else up. For example, I'll give you like Oprah, for example. Oprah did not make everything about Oprah. Oprah platformed other people. Yes, she has a massive audience, but she said, I need other people to have massive audiences too, so we could keep changing people's lives. And if Oprah, say she got hit by a train, her message can still carry on. Yeah. Now, if an influencer gets hit by a train and they fall off the top of the mountain, it's over. Or if they die, you know, 2,000 years later, it's still over. But let's take like Oprah, for example, with her being at the bottom of the mountain, she platformed Dr. Phil, she platformed Susie Orman, she platformed, you know, the cooking lady, what's her name, Rachel Ray, you know, like she like made all these other superstars.
Yeah.
And they teach and change people's lives. And that can keep going on if those people have that same mindset.
Yeah.
So that's the difference between influencer and influential people. For example, Stoicism, like Marcus Aurelius, for example, for those who study Stoicism. Marcus Aurelius, that's 2,000 years ago. He's up in heaven looking down like, yep, Stoicism is still going, because it's an idea that's bigger than him. It's an idea that can keep changing lives. I'm on a, you know, podcast right now about, and I'm talking about veganism. Somebody started that. Who it is, I don't know, because it's not important. What's important is that that person created something that wasn't about themselves, and it created something that can continue to help people's lives. So that's the difference, and that's what I'm excited to create. And I wanted to create a world that continues to unlock people. I wanted to create something that could last hundreds of years after I'm gone, and can be everybody else's and not just mine. So I created a world called Quantopia. And I wanted to build Quantopia away from the algorithms. I wanted to build a world away from the artificial intelligence and away from the corporations who take the data and sell it. I wanted to create a safe haven. So what I did was created a secret digital speakeasy that can only be discovered through a phone number. And when you text that phone number, it takes you to a secret website. Then when you put in a secret passcode somewhere on this secret website, it, boom, it takes you into a portal of Quantopia. The only way you could discover this is through another quantum citizen.
Yeah.
You can't even get it from me. I will never put the phone number out publicly. So I'm making people connect. And I'm also building a world that does not have status. that does not have followers, that does not have accounts, because I don't want people to feel inferior. If they're on here and somebody has 3,000 followers or they only post something and it gets 2 likes, they feel invisible. We don't need another place that makes us feel inferior. Yep. So I wanted to create a safe haven for people to learn and communicate and connect and take something that's digital and turn it into the 3D. So I want to create chapters of Quantopia all throughout America and get people from being online to being in the physical, where we're equal, we're together, we're learning, and we're bringing other people with us. So if anybody's listening and you want to be a part of Quantopia, find somebody who has the phone number. Quantopians are always open to bringing other people in.
I love that. I love that, man. And I know we got to wrap up, so I do want to ask you my final question. And my question is, if you could have dinner with anybody, dead or alive, 3 legends besides myself, who would it be and why?
Okay. I would say the first one would probably be Martin Luther King. I would love to be able to just understand his thought process of resilience for standing. Like, I would want to like interview him about the early days of like when it was an idea and how to just persevere until it comes all the way to life, to where we are today. Like, because he's still here. Once again, yeah. Ism, he's still here. Martin Luther King is not gone. That's who I'm fascinated by. Martin Luther King wasn't an influencer. Imagine Martin Luther King being like, yeah, come to my rally. Like, it's $20. Like, you know, like, what? You know, but he operated from the ism because he wanted something that can continue on long after he was gone. And it's proven that. The second person would be Muhammad Ali. I think Muhammad Ali was one of the most educated men. And how he was willing to sacrifice everything for what he believed in. And I would love to be able to understand who he studied and who he learned from, because you don't become as smart as him just like by accident. Like, he was so smart. He was so worldly.
Yeah.
And from what, Kentucky? He was worldly. And I would love to be able to sit down and see who he studied and who his masters were. And then one of the last people that I would really want to study would be, would probably be like an Abraham Lincoln. There's not too many presidents or like business people, you know, who have like clean legacies. Yeah. If we think about people with the greatest legacies in the world, we're probably going to name mostly brown people. Like Martin Luther King, a Gandhi, you know, Muhammad Ali. Like, there's a lot of people of my skin color who their legacy gets tarnished in some way, usually based around the concept of money. So when I look at a Abraham Lincoln, he has one of the greatest legacies that's untarnished, and he would like his entire cabinet was full of enemies that he made into friends. And it's like, okay, let me sit down with Honest Abe and like understand how he could go the exact opposite direction of what everybody else was thinking, and it worked.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, man. I really, really appreciate you coming on here and giving me and my tribe an hour of your time. I know this is going to be really valuable to the listeners and like super powerful. Even off of this, I got chills and I'm ready to just keep visualizing and creating. And I'm so glad that I got this opportunity with you, man. Seriously. If you don't mind, can we go ahead and take a picture? That way we let the world know we were with the man, the myth, the legend.
Absolutely.
Here we go. So if you want to get in the picture, Kyle and Jeff, please go ahead and turn your cameras on. If not, it's Bethany, Charlie, and me. 1, 2, and 3. Awesome. I really, really appreciate you, Charlie, and I'm going to tag you in it once I drop it. I hope you have a beautiful day. Keep grinding, keep inspiring, and thank you, my man. Seriously.
Thank you, too. I appreciate y'all.
Let's go, let's go, let's go! Man, Charlie, you
drop the mic, you drop the power into the talk, and you drop the sauce. My number one takeaway is this. It's already done. Time just moves slow. And I love that concept because everything that I've brought into my life, I visioned this years ago. Everything that I've manifested into my life, it is true. It's already been destined for me. It's just the fact that it doesn't happen on my time. It happens on its time. And for me, I'm a woman of faith, so it happens on God's time. It happens in faith's time. It is already yours. Claim it. There's nothing stopping you from getting to the next level but yourself. And most importantly, your mind. Man, this talk was amazing. If you want more talks like this, I highly recommend you do the smart thing and go ahead and subscribe to the Power Talk. And if you want to get more involved, you want more talks like this, you're like, man, I need to get more of this community. I need to get more of this girl. Where do I get it? Go ahead on Instagram and follow the fearless leader, Nani, at Azonani. That is spelled A-Z-O-N-A-N-I. Today, I'm in a really good mood, so I felt like spelling it out. And if you want to go ahead and follow the tribe, go ahead and follow us at Empower Tribe, and that's N-I-N Power Tribe, and that's also our name on Facebook. But I got something even better for you guys, like something even better, and that is a gift. If you go ahead to empowertribe.com/push, you may get a gift out of me, may get a message, may get an email, who knows? But you got to go to empowertribe.com/push to find out. And the one thing that I got to tell you guys is this. If you want to go ahead and get empowered, if you want to keep showing up, if you want to keep getting to the next level, keep coming on these podcasts. These episodes are invaluable. And I got one thing to say. It seems like I got a lot to say. But I got one thing to say, and it's this. I'll see you in the next episode. Make sure that you go ahead and apply the notes that you took into your life, because we all know that action is cool, but action without a reaction will leave you with a lot less traction to get to the next level of execution. So let's go and let's grow. See you in the next episode.